Well, we've got Paul Smith. We're going to take your phone calls. Lots more to talk with him about as well, including dousing. Yes, not necessarily walking around with a branch that just points down to water. No, no, no. This is bigger than that. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, did you want to finish up on what you were saying before the break hit us, or do you want to get right into dousing?
I don't remember what I was saying, so I guess not.
Remote view it. Go back into the past, huh?
Yeah. I did actually want to say a couple things about, give some examples of events where they were going to happen, but people were actually able to change their futures, if that's okay.
Sure.
Some of them are kind of interesting. One was actually my webmaster told me a story. Happened to her brother. He had this dream that he would be traveling along, and at a certain intersection, this is the route he took to work or someplace he went regularly, at a certain intersection, he had a dream of being involved in an accident. So this goes back to your example of a traffic accident. So the next day he woke up, and he didn't really necessarily think anything about the dream, except that when he got to that intersection, he remembered it, and he just hesitated before going through on a green light.
Mm-hmm.
And blam, somebody blew right through that intersection at a high rate of speed. And if he had not had that moment of hesitation because of the dream, he would have got clobbered.
Yep, same thing happened to me.
Okay,
same
all right.
And that's what we were talking about. You were talking about in the dream state. Mm-hmm. You were talking about your students. And that they would, or was it Ed who was talking about his students in the dream state predicting...
Oh, right, living underground and all that. That was it.
Underground.
Yeah,
that's
that was
right.
It. Yeah. And while I don't dispute the idea that that's possible, there's also, you have to be very careful that they don't get those kind of impressions from some other source. For example, what they already know, or thing we call telepathic overlay, where somebody believes something very strongly, the tasker believes something very strongly, and the viewers pick up on that. There's lots of things, but... it's just interesting. And the kind of event I talked about, the traffic accident, is a prime example of the kind of event that's going to happen, but you can do something about it, about your behavior that affects your future and thus maybe avoids a problem. There's this really classic story that Dale Graff tells. I don't know if you're familiar with Dale.
No.
He was an important figure in the remote viewing program. I was written a couple of books and such. And I ran into him again at the SSE conference, by the way, the conference I told you about,
right,
for the first time in a number of years. And it was kind of fun. But
and how does he spell his name? G-R-A-F-F?
G-R-A-F-F, yeah.
Okay.
At some point, you might want to get him on. He's a very interesting guy and has a different view or perspective than the rest of us. So each of us have our own kind of way of looking at things. And he's very interested in dream ESP. But at any rate... That's why this story is fresh in my mind, because he once again mentioned it while I was in his presence there. He knew a couple of folks, I believe they're counterintelligence agents, that were scheduled to fly somewhere together on a flight. One of them the night before had this dream of an airplane taking off and then blowing up in a fireball in the sky. And the next day, he got up and said, "I just don't feel right about flying today," and he canceled his flight. But he made up some excuses, as is often the case when people have these kinds of experiences. They feel a bit embarrassed by saying, "Well, I have this premonition that just makes me uneasy." They make up something like, "Well, I don't feel well," or "I've got this other thing that I forgot I had to do," or whatever, right? And so he took his partner to the airport, and he didn't feel strongly enough about to tell his partner about the dream. He's too embarrassed. His partner got on the plane, and this guy was sitting there watching out the window as the plane took off and blew up.
Oh, my God.
And apparently, you know, it was pretty devastating to him.
Well, you know, even David Booth had a dream of that Chicago plane crash that happened back in the late 70s.
Right.
And, and he even went to the FAA before it happened and tried to it was a DC-10, tried to explain it to them. And they documented the fact that he did go to them.
Mm-hmm.
And just incredible. But let's talk a little bit about dousing,
yeah,
Paul, and then we'll take the many calls that
Well, now we're getting into,
now
this is the phase where we talk about what you can actually do to do some future prediction here.
And what's your definition of dousing? Because a lot of people think of an old farmer walking around looking for water with a branch.
Yeah, and of course that is a form of dousing. certainly. Dowsing itself, gee, you know what? I have never come up with a definition of dowsing on my own. It's the mode of ESP in which you no, that's not going to work. you caught me off guard here. That's a good question. I can explain in terms of remote viewing.
Okay.
They're sort of the inverse of each other or the reciprocal of each other. In remote viewing, you know generally, we'll leave search problems out of this for the moment, but in remote viewing, you generally know what the location is. You don't know what is there. And so the remote viewer's task is to tell you, describe for you, what is at that location, right? In dowsing, it's the other way around. You know exactly what you're looking for, you just don't know where it is. And so dowsing is a means of finding the location of things that you don't have, that you don't know. You know what the thing is, you don't know where it is, and you're trying to find it. Now, remote viewing can be used that way, but not as effectively. And so you can search for water using dowsing. You can search for minerals and things. You can search for missing objects. You can map dowsing to locate on a two-dimensional surface that designates a location on an area on the ground for missing people or things. But you can use dowsing for other things as well. You can use it for information, to gain information that you may be lacking or help you to make decisions. Dowsing, usually people think of dowsing as using some kind of instrument, your forked stick that you mentioned,
a pendulum.
Pendulum. But you can do dowsing even without those things. There's a mode called deviceless dowsing, where you just learn to respond to your own impulse of your own body, impressions of your own body, or whatever sensations that can help you guide you to a location or whatever. So
it is remarkable how it works. Yeah. I use it too. I play a little game with people. But this is with the pendulum. It's also a truth detector.
It can be, yes, absolutely.
I mean, I make a circle. I put a yes up and down and no, left and right. And then they hold a pendulum right over it, and I tell them to concentrate, keep it still. Then I tell them to move it, yes, and so it goes up and down like your head would. And then I say, think no, and it goes back and forth. And they're swearing that they're not moving it. But there's some kind of slight reflex that the brain, I guess, sends to your fingers. But then you ask them a yes or no question, and sure enough, they're tuned in, and you can find out almost anything from somebody, Paul. I love it. To the
it's
phones we
devious,
go.
It's almost devious, isn't it?
We'll talk more about this. Let's take some calls, though. Tom in North Carolina, you're up with us. First-time caller. Hi, Tom.
Okay. Yeah, first of all, I am a remote viewer, and I'll give you a clue on Steve Fawcett. Look for a place called Santa Clara. Okay, now what I've been doing for 40 years is what you call remote viewing. In Christianity, we call it visions.
Mm-hmm.
I've in the last few years, got into mind reading. I'm actually documenting this stuff. What I call view travel, 25, 30 years ago, I could travel across the United States to meet somebody that was waiting for me, a total stranger. I did it in 99. I called the FBI and told them I saw the Twin Towers in April of 86, and I saw a dust cloud. I didn't understand what it was until afterwards. Oh, I went to them. I gave them the location of the Enron before it happened. I got within two blocks of exactly in Houston.
Huh.
I have a future. I do future viewing all the time. It's getting big time. I started this in 1972. And I've had several years of bad times where I didn't do anything.
Hey, Tom, what did the FBI say to you, though, when you told them back in the 80s about the World Trade Center?
Well, what I did, I didn't tell them until after 9/11 because I didn't know what it was. I thought it was – what I thought was I saw two identical buildings, black and white, no windows, and a dust cloud. I thought it was going to be a hurricane, and I got the word in New York City and wrote it down.
Oh.
But I didn't know what it was.
Okay.
You know, that often happens in kind of future – prediction of this nature. In fact, in 1984, in the remote viewing unit, they did a project in which a viewer described an airplane flying into the Capitol Dome. And that was pretty interesting. What's even more, what I got a real kick out of, I went to see the X-Files movie, the new one, the other day.
Did you like it? It got panned by a lot of people.
Yeah, it wasn't what I expected from an X-Files movie. Well, actually, it was in some respects. It was kind of in their serial killer mode, you know, and it was worth seeing. I felt like it was worth seeing. But I was a little bit disappointed in the supernatural angle, which, of course, what I was most interested in. That ended up, I think, weaker than it should have been. But what was interesting is I was curious enough that I wanted to go back and kind of refresh my memory about X-Files, and I got on Wikipedia and I was reading all these back episodes that they had. And they aired an episode in March, I think it was, March of 2001, that featured an airplane flying into the Trade Towers, being flown into the Trade Towers on purpose.
Yeah.
Now, talk about timing. That's just amazing. It suggests to me that there's been a number of folks, not just our caller, Tom, but a number of other folks who had presentiments of Trade Towers or some event like that happening. And here we are, a popular culture TV show, having, you know, just a blatant sort of an episode like that. That was just amazing.
Tom, go ahead. We didn't let you finish.
What's fun is I was prompted today. I'm doing this every day. In fact, I'm professional now, big time all day long. I called the FBI, and they sent me to their research facility number. They're going to call me back out of Quantico. I'm just trying to be helpful. You know, before I hang up, or you guys quit, can you give me an address? I don't do internet where I can contact. I have read the book by mail, but I just happened to stumble on it. I didn't even know what it was. I've been doing it for 41 years, and I'm
okay.
Just wanted to help people, you know.
How about the best we can do, I don't think you give out your address, Paul, nor would I want you, and you'll get
inundated. I give you mine. I don't care.
Well, I do actually have a post office box.
Okay, how about that? Let's try to get you to remember it here, Tom. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, go for it.
It's pretty simple. Box 1003, and it's Round Rock, Texas. And the zip is...
Let me revote it. Let's see.
You know, it is getting late. But anyway, no, it's 78680, I think, is the zip.
78680.
Yeah.
All right. There
I
you
may
go,
have to get
Tom.
Up on my website and find out my own address.
Okay. East of the Rock. Maybe during the break you can check it and come back and give it again. East of the Rockies. Hey, Carol, how are you?
Hi, good. I wanted to ask Paul, in his experience with the RV program, did the government ever ask the viewers to consider in their predictions or even discuss with them the whole astronomical data coming up of the Earth coming into the galactic center and, sometime around 2012? Did they ever approach this? Is the government aware or thinking of possible fallout from this?
No, that never came up in the unit. Now, the whole 2012 thing has become more interesting in just very recent years. And of course, it owes its genesis to some statements made about the Mayan calendar, which I personally don't get too excited about 2012. I think that there's a lot of things said about it which probably are going to turn out not to be true. In fact, I'm kind of looking forward to 2012.
And, you know, I'm predicting a solar eruption.
Yeah.
Like Ed. Maybe not as bad, but...
Yeah, well, the proof is always in the pudding. You see what happens in 2012, and then we'll know. But I just think that there's a lot of, in some cases, almost hysteria about it. And I think that a lot of things are predicted about it just aren't going to actually.
See, I don't think it's going to be just 2012, though. I think we're leading up to it. It could happen any time.
Well, I think that's true. It's just that, you know, you think everything's going to be okay and it's going to be an event. But then you hear these really... You know, I think it's, 26,500 years, and you start to wonder, you know, is this, you know, just coming together? But
well, the one thing that, of course, you can always be sure of, that ultimately there will be a disaster or a catastrophe of some sort. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. The world.
Yep.
But what it is, when it is, again, that's kind of what we're talking about. How do you sort that out? And... But as far as your question, the government itself was never interested in that. And, in fact, it wasn't even really a topic of conversation until really fairly recently. So,
would you go back and work on a government program if they asked you to?
Oh, that would depend on the circumstances. I certainly would.
You wouldn't rule it out?
I wouldn't rule it out, and I certainly would entertain it on a contract basis, where I wasn't actually locked in for, you know, some 9-to-5 job, you know.
You don't want to get recalled to active duty, do you?
No. I was offered the opportunity a couple times, not because of remote viewing, but because of my Middle East studies background, my Arabic language and stuff. And I just had other fish to fry. I'd done my time in the sandbox.
Wild card line, Jacob in Maryland. Hey, Jacob, go ahead.
Hey, I was wondering, I have some feeling sometimes that sometimes what I experienced has already happened, not deja vu, but sometimes I think I've already seen something before. Maybe it's my subconscious mind seeing the future. Is that form of remote viewing, and what would you describe this phenomenon as?
Well, of course, all of this ESP type stuff is related in some way, in my view, and so you could say it's related to remote viewing. And what you've described sounds like a premonition of some sort. And now you're saying so you're saying you have an impression that when you experience something, you have perceived it or experienced it before. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, like some things I've done, I think I've already done them before. Like if I read a book, I think I've read it before. It looked
a little deja vu, I guess.
Yeah. That, it sounds more like deja vu than premonition, actually. And deja vu, well, there's a physical explanation for it, which doesn't always satisfy me. I think some instances of deja vu really are ESP-type events, although some are probably are physical, neurophysiological kinds of events. So it's hard to say, and deja vu is something that's very hard to untangle exactly what is going on with that.
Paul, take a very quick opportunity here and give us your websites.
Yes. Okay, good. So first is my main one, which is rviewer.com, rviewer.com. And those interested in dowsing, there's learndowsing.com. The two words learn dowsing run together with the .com. In fact, I should tell you, of course, I'm interested in dowsing independently, but I've also got a product, which is the Learn Dowsing set. And in fact, just in honor of you, George,
thank you.
The folks that run that company have put in a coast-to-coast discount or something for the next week or so. So if someone's interested in the product and they heard about it on Coast to Coast, they get a discount.
LearnDowsing.com.
Yep, that's it.
D-O-W-S-I-N-G.
Yeah, and I'd like to actually talk a bit about how you could use dowsing in, first of all, helping you deal with a catastrophe or predicting possibly a catastrophe or a disaster, and then how to predict something valuable, like maybe the lottery or something.
All right. Let's do that when we come back, Paul. Paul's website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and ours, of course, is coasttocoastam.com, where you can email me anytime you want at george@coasttocoastam.com. Paul, how many remote viewers are out there now? Thousands? Hundreds?
I would say there are probably thousands who have had some exposure to remote viewing in terms of doing it. So if you want to count someone who has done remote viewing as a remote viewer, there are definitely thousands.
All right. Well, you stay with us. Paul Smith, our special guest tonight, and you, of course, because we'll continue to take more of your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Richard Florida. That's right. He joins us. His book, Who's Your City? He's going to talk about what's happening in the economy, your pocketbook, your lifestyle. Should be a fascinating Coast to Coast show. And back with your calls with Paul Smith in just a moment. Paul, you were talking about dowsing and how it can help find people safe locations during a catastrophe or a disaster.
Yeah, that's one potential use for it. The first thing I wanted to say is people oftentimes kind of turn their futures over to somebody else. They look for somebody to tell them what's going to happen in the future. And in fact, everybody is equipped, if they just learn how to do it, to take that over for themselves. It's sort of a self-empowerment thing in attempting to determine your own future. Not determine your own future, discover your own future, or discover how you can affect your own future in positive ways. And you can affect yourself positively even in a negative situation, such as a pending catastrophe or disaster. So, for example, and dowsing is really quite appropriate here. There was, of course, a hurricane that just recently made landfall down in South Texas. And if you happen to be on a coast and you need to know whether a hurricane's coming your way or not, you can use dowsing to at least give you some insight into it. There's two ways. You can use remote viewing through a process called associative remote viewing. In which case, you just sort of send yourself a message from the future, whether whether the hurricane's going to hit you or not, right?
Right.
And the other one is you can use dowsing. You can ask a yes or no kind of question. It's not something you want to just do in those events. You need to practice it so you know how reliable your responses are, so you've trained yourself how to use it properly and all that sort of thing. But you can use dowsing to say, okay, is the hurricane going to come here or is it not? Or you can use associative remote viewing with some assistance to do the same thing. So it's possible to, in fact, get information about a future event like that. I do want to caution folks, don't use this as a substitute for good common sense.
Of course. All right.
We are blessed with both intellect and ESP abilities, psi abilities, and we should use both of them, but not one at the expense of the other. So that's one thing. And you can, and this is the case, of course, where there's an event you can't do anything about. You can't do anything about that tornado or the hurricane, whether it's going to hit where you are or not. But you can, if you know enough in advance to take some kind of action to avoid it, then you can, as we've discussed in a number of occasions tonight. So that might be avoiding a disaster or catastrophe, and there's certainly much more we could say about that, but I also want to turn to the other side. You can also use this these approaches, again, to take charge of your life, and in a positive way. Of course, one of the more brilliant examples of that was one of the folks that got a hold of one of my dowsing set that I mentioned earlier and used it to win $18,000 in the lottery. I'd mentioned that on an earlier show, but in fact, this guy did that. He took the principles he learned from the dowsing set, and he ended up going to town on the lottery. He didn't win the whole bag, but who cares? He made $18,000, so you can't complain about that.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not
so
at all.
You can use it to help you, you know, do positive things, not just win the lottery, but you can use it to help you make decisions in your life to some degree. Again, always using all your faculties, not just this, but oftentimes, you know, what job you should take, what house you should buy, where you ought to look for a house or whatever. Dowsing is very handy in that respect. But again, it's not something you just do it cold once or twice. You really need to practice and hone your skills so that you know how you're reliable, how reliable you are, and when you can count on being most reliable.
Okay, to the phones we go. Very good, Paul Smith. Sean in North Carolina. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, thanks.
All right, that's good. I'm calling because I wanted to find out from you, it's Paul, right?
Yes.
How can you tell a dream that is, I guess, ESP sort of from just a, I guess, a lucid dream? Don't cut me off. I got an example for that.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and give my example. I had a dream a while back about two airplanes. You know, this is after 9/11, of course, but that's another story. The two airplanes were flying real low, and a whole bunch of disaster stuff went on when all that went down, including, you know, like a map-style pointer, you know, upstate South Carolina. And I'm sitting there like, okay, what is all this? I mean, it was a really explicit colored dream, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was as if I was really living that day, and the reason why I have such confidence in this dream is because, like a week before 9/11, I also had a dream about that actually came true, and nobody believed me when I told them about it, but everybody forgot that I told them about it before that.
Okay.
And that's why I want to know, you know, how...
Okay, when did you have the most recent dream?
I'm sorry?
When did you have this dream you're telling us about?
Maybe a little over a year ago.
Okay. And so did anything occur after that dream that confirmed what you'd dreamt?
Oh, no. I mean, nothing's came of it yet. That's why I'm just like, okay, did I see a future event? Because, I mean, you know, it was, you know, explosions.
I got you. Okay.
Nuclear.
Yeah, I see what you're asking. Okay, here's the situation. It's very hard to tell when a dream is a precognitive dream or when it's just a lucid dream or just a very vivid dream that you remember. It's very hard to tell. The only ways you can tell, really, ultimately, is if what you dreamed comes to pass in a way that is very similar to what you dreamed. Now, of course, by then it's too late to do anything about it, right? So here's the general rule, I'd say. If you have a dream that seems to be some kind of disaster, And there's enough specifics in it that someone could do something about that if it's really going to happen. Then you report it, okay, to whoever you can. And maybe it's your local police, you know somebody in the police department, whatever. If you can even report it to the FAA if you want, because they do have ways of reporting those things. I can't guarantee they'd pay any attention to it, but at least you would be on record as having reported it. Now, when I say specific, I mean like the example I used that my webmaster told me. Her brother had the dream of coming to a certain intersection and a certain event happening. He had a specific time and place. The time was when he reached that intersection. The place was that intersection, which he recognized. Now, if you have a dream about planes flying somewhere and blowing up, and you have no idea of when it is or where it is, there's really not much you can do about that. I mean, I get folks emailing me and writing me all the time telling me about dreams they've had about this disaster kind of thing that's going to happen, but there's not enough information in it to do anything about it. It could be anywhere in the world, and it could be any time. And at that point, that information is just not very useful. It may be true. It may really be a precognitive dream of some sort. You're having a premonition about some event. But in the end, there's nothing anybody can do with that because there's not enough information.
So true, so true. Next up, Jeff in Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. My question for Paul is, when I was younger, even now as I'm older, I've had dreams to where, I mean, real vivid dreams of interaction with friends and family and coworkers, and then, like, a month later, the situation will come up, and, like, one word in the conversation will spark my memory, mm-hmm. and I'll remember everything that's going to happen for, like, the next 10 minutes.
Right.
And my question to you is, does that make me more susceptible to be a remote viewer, or...
Not necessarily. It means that you can hook in. It may mean that you can hook into the signal line better, or just arbitrary like that. But controlling it might be another matter. Of course, with remote viewing, the idea is you control your perceptual processes so that you gain the information as desired, not just arbitrarily random information, which may not be useful. Right. One thing I'd suggest, though, to help you out with this is: do you keep a dream journal?
I used to. I haven't in a while.
Oh, I really suggest you do that. Anytime you have a very vivid dream that you remember, write down all the details that you can recall about it, because then that becomes evidence later that when you have one of these events. It also helps you to kind of evaluate and analyze what's happening to you and with you when you have these dreams, and what is reliable and what isn't and all that kind of thing, which actually may lead to you being able to control it a bit more in the future. So that could be helpful.
Okay.
All right, great. Thank you so much. Danny, California, take it away.
Yeah, hi.
Yeah.
I had a question. I had an experience in Mammoth Lakes, California, involving teleportation, and I didn't know where the place was where I was going to be, but I landed there, and I stayed there for about 15 or 20 seconds, and then I started walking back to where I was before I left, and then I ended up back there where I was before I left. Is that remote viewing, or is that, like, a pretty powerful remote viewing?
That's kind of weird. No, just kidding. It depends. Now, I don't know if it's teleportation or if you had an out-of-body experience.
Well, I'm working with the Department of Energy, and a public affairs specialist, and Diane Feinstein actually has a case manager for this. And I've talked to Wright Patterson and also Edwards Air Force Base, Dr. Frank Mead. Who put out a teleportation project. And I have a forensic psychologist and a medical doctor who supports me in the teleportation area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just east from west, and, like, I was running back.
Well, that doesn't answer my question. If it was how do you know it was not an out-of-body
experience? Because I opened the door. I opened a door physically. I physically touched something.
Oh, okay. So if you actually physically touched something, that suggests you were in a second place. I don't know what to tell you about that other than the fact that it isn't remote viewing. So that would be in a whole different category of things, involving a whole different branch in physics and everything
else.
Mind
over matter and everything else.
Yeah.
But not knowing where exactly I would land, but I landed there in a perfect place while I was in motion.
Does this happen a lot to you?
It happened twice in that two moments, but there was also a period of of time where I believe I wanted to do this. I started running fast, like up my street and stuff like that, where I so I can produce that phenomenon.
Lucid dream, Paul?
It's hard to say. All I want to say is just stay out of my bathroom, okay?
A remote viewer with a sense of humor. Dangerous. Yeah.
No, I don't know. Frankly, I can't shed any light on that phenomenon. That would take a whole bunch more study to figure out what was going on there.
Sheila in Texas, you're on with Paul Smith. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
I was wondering, with teleportation and everything you're talking about, being able to be in the room and sometimes maybe people can see you, or could you be mistaken for shadow people?
No, I don't think so, Paul.
Well, the shadow people thing is not something I'm very familiar with. And generally...
You can't see a remote viewer, right?
No, there's no certified stories, no validated stories of remote viewers becoming visible to anybody.
Even though Engo talked about how these ETs felt his presence, that was different.
Yeah, that's a different deal. There's some interesting stories about that. Of course, again, not validated, because all you're getting is the subjective report of the person. But, Ingo has got a pretty good reputation. And my friend Bill Ray, who I mentioned earlier, he actually remote viewed the Lost Ark as well in that same project Ed was talking about. And he encountered some beings there who he swore noticed his presence as well. So there are reports of that. I was trying to think in the out-of-body literature if there's any case where someone was out of body and was observed by someone at the location where the person went out of body. I, at the moment, I'm drawing a blank. I don't know. It's a whole field of study that could be interesting. The trick, of course, is replicating it so that someone can actually study it. That's a bit harder to do, but anyway.
All right. Did he help you at all, Sheila, there?
Oh, absolutely, especially if you could experiment with that to see if that might be where people might be mistaken in what they're looking at.
I know
somebody said that he actually went into a building and there were other spiritual beings there that knocked him out of the building, told him to get out. And whether he thought he was in some government installation or something by accident.
Yeah, I don't know how many government installations have anything spiritual about them, but you never know.
Well, no, you are absolutely right about that, Paul. Mark in Washington, D.C., our number one rated station. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you very much. I need some help sort of dealing with the survivor's guilt left over from having a major premonition and not being able to do anything, and not to be a broken record, but it was to do with 9/11.
Okay.
Back in 94, I started doing creative visualization with the Shakti Gawain technique, and I had a lot of sort of beginner's mind, some very high-end experiences, including, walking into wanting a job, somebody coming up and offering the job, all those, actual money and so forth. And then it sort of was a quiet time. And then in July of 2001, I was working right next to the World Trade Center in the building next, just north of Building 7, and I was living in Chinatown, and I was walking down the street, and I looked up, and I saw what I thought were smoke billowing out of both buildings. So I ran home, grabbed my roommate, ran up to the roof, and was freaking out. And my roommate, who was a photographer for a major magazine, said, "No, no, no, it's just clouds. It's just clouds." And so I calmed down. Then I had a series of events leading right up to 9/11. And then on 9/11 itself, I flew cross country that morning on a wide body jet out of Newark Airport to San Diego for a wireless conference. And I landed out there, and I turned on the television for about a half an hour, and just as I went to turn it off, the very last two people on HBO's Real Sex at the very end of the show were my two roommates from New York. So my head started buzzing, and I reached for the remote control because I knew something was wrong. I flipped the remote over. It was 6 o'clock on the West Coast. Flipped it over just in time to see the second plane fly into the building.
God.
And so, I there were a series of events leading up to it. I ate lunch at the plaza where the globe was at the center of the World Trade Center the day before for the first time ever. And I made a comment about how it looked like a cemetery because it looked like the Mount of Olives, the three slabs laid on top of each other around that area, looks like in Israel. And there were all these things, but there was no actionable intelligence. There was nothing. for me to do, I felt. And I, ever since then, you know, I've tried to replicate and sort of ask for things to, you know, be given to me so I could do something about it. And it's just, it's sort of racked me ever since then. I wonder if you could comment on that. And just
So your issue is survivor's guilt. Is that what you're...
I would guess so.
Yeah. I would say, first of all, people do feel badly about situations like this where they get some kind of premonition. It turns out to be true in the end. And then they feel bad that they didn't do something about it. Well, here's something to keep in mind. the caller, I'm sorry, what was his name?
It's Mark.
Mark. He got it when he said there's no actionable intelligence there. There really wasn't. And if there's something you can't do something about, then there's no need to feel guilt about it. You're just reporting it, something like that, would not have helped avert the situation at all, would not have made a bit of difference. In fact, at most, they would have probably thought you were just hyperventilating or something, you know. And so there was no point in it. And if you can't change something by your action, then you don't need to feel guilty if you took no action.
Paul, quickly get your address out again.
URLs, rviewer.com, rviewer.com, and learndowsing.com.
All right, very good. Thanks, Paul.
You bet.
Appreciate you being on the program. You can get to bed, my friend, because tomorrow our Coast to Coast will be with Richard Florida as we talk about your lifestyle right here on Coast to Coast AM. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.